Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
On this episode of Damsels in the DMs,
I think it's really important to just understand that we are more than what we do every day.
This message is intended as a reminder that we are not licensed professionals, not psychiatrists or psychologists. If you have a serious problem, please seek professional help. The National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
There's some damsels in the DM.
Yes, queen.
Tell us what's the vibe. There's some damsels in the DM.
Who are you?
Please tell us what's the vibe. DMs, DMs, yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs, we don't need them. We just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Damsels in the DMs. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Alejandro. How are you, Lauren? Oh, my goodness. It's been such a busy summer and beginning to the fall. And here we are in October. What is life? How are you?
I am doing well. This semester has been kind of crazy for me. It's been all about producing. And I think I mentioned on here that I officially started my production company, Pathway Pictures. So I've started taking on producing adventures. And that's been a whirlwind. I think I have my hands in like 8 different projects right now. And it's all very exciting. It's also like a little intimidating. I've been circling through some of our past episodes that talk about imposter syndrome, actually, because you know, I think as women, like starting to ask for money and talk about what you're worth and what you add to a project, like some of those things are not natural to me. So just learning more how to be like a boss of your company, which you also know through your publishing company, it's definitely new territory. But as we'll talk about in this episode, like following what I care about and following what I love is more important to me. So I'm trying to get over all of the fear and also doing it.
Well, I'm excited that you're making progress with the production company, but you also mentioned having to make really important milestones on writing, right? I mean, you're working on your third book right now, right?
Yeah, which is crazy. It's actually one of the things that I really love about Columbia's program is that I've now had my third feature almost fully written. The third could still use a little bit of work. And, you know, like, that's actually another thing that I picked up on this semester is that like having an idea that you're excited about is so important.
Oh, yeah.
And this current idea that I'm working on, it's like, I want to talk about it all the time and just like with whoever will listen. And it's not like something that I've always had with every project that I've been involved with before. And I almost feel like the ideas that you take on creatively, it almost has to feel like a new love, you know? Like you wanna be in the honeymoon stage with your idea.
Yeah, it's like a baby gestating. And I wanna show you something that's so exciting on the writing side of things too, because I got my proofs for my book, which will be published before the end of this year. I want to
definitely... Oh my god, tell us about it.
This is Dream Babel. It's a collection it's based on really just dreams that I've written in a specific book, and I got into this practice of writing down my dreams immediately after I could remember any detail. And what was cool was that this practice allowed me to remember my dreams more vividly when I woke up the next day. And I was also able to become more of an active agent in the dream state. So it was this really interesting cycle that perpetuated this lucid dreaming, this like astral projection. And I'm not trying to be a dream interpreter in this. I really just am putting what I remember of the dreams onto the page and seeing if there's any sort of connective thread that can be made among people who decide to tap in and read or share some of their experiences through dreaming.
So in the book, is it a collection of the many dreams that you've had, or what's like the layout?
Yeah, it's strictly just a collection of what was in the dream state, and that's it. I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to interpret anything or try to elucidate any sort of like a deeper meaning. I'm just putting it on the page, what I remember. And what's really cool is like trying to balance between like writer and editor, it's a challenge, but
yeah,
cool to just kind of like release any sort of inhibition and just put it out there. And it's just like, okay, like, whatever. Like, it happened. Don't think about it too much. Let's just keep moving on. And I think that's one of the things that I really admire about our guest today, Angela, who is such an admirable multi-hyphenate, but also a really great example of being able to just kind of roll with the punches and constantly evolve and just like be fearless.
100%. Yeah. And Angela and I met at an event for Filmmakers, which is a wonderful collective of female filmmakers. And it was amazing because at the time I was actually deciding whether or not I should go to Columbia, which is so funny because obviously I'm a year in of the program now.
Yeah.
So it's very full circle. And I remember Angela, who was also an actress before she became a multi-hyphenate, said to me that she had advice from Al Pacino himself that was to live a full life and to never let acting take over your life. And that, you know, really hit hard for me. And I think through my conversation with her, it definitely inspired me in starting my production company and listening to her and her success through her production company and the many various projects that she's taken on and had her hands in. At this point, she clearly took Pacino's advice and ran with it. And I mean, having role models like her to look up to are so, so important.
Right. And from directing to acting to producing, I could see how, you know, how this role model, not only as, you know, with you being a woman, but me being a creative and both of us being multi-hyphenates, it's so fascinating to really learn from someone who decides to embrace what they are passionate about, but also to really own and take ownership of what you want to see come to fruition. And then, you know, thankfully, we have these opportunities to, you know, act in whatever other projects might be calling our attention. But we always have this baby of our own that we're always working toward or working on and wanting to see it take the best shape possible.
And she named her production company after her dog. And as a huge dog person myself, I know that Ernie, my little guy over here, is pretty mad at me that it's Pathway Pictures, not Ernest Worthing Pictures, but maybe for the next company.
But there's the alignment of the W in there, and you know. The...
So, yeah, the W, I did that for you, Ernie.
That's it. Well, let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it. So Angela and I actually met at Filmmakers, which is an organization that Stacey Capone started. And I would love to just hear a little bit about your background, how you got into filmmaking, where you're located, all of the good fun stuff.
Sure. Well, I started out in this business as an actress. I became a filmmaker because I wanted to see the kind of roles that I wanted to play on the screen and see the kind of stories that I had in my head showcasing women on the screen and on your television. So I started writing. I went to, and actually a casting director said, why don't you go get looser on your feet and check out UCB, you know, try some improv for commercial auditions so I could kind of jump in there and throw in the funny buttons. And I fell in love with it and I fell in love with writing. So I started taking sketch comedy writing classes there. And that was sort of the beginning of the end. I was like, oh, I'm hooked. I've got the filmmaking bug now. And I started directing because I lost my director on a shoot for a project I had written for myself that I was producing. He got really, really ill and I had to jump in last minute and it was sort of a means to an end. And now I'm just like, oh, what a wonderful, happy accident, because here I am and I love directing and it really inspires me every day to do what I do.
I love those happy accidents where the universe just kind of pushes us into something that may seem uncomfortable, but is actually quite a natural fit for how you see yourself growing.
Yeah.
What were some of the surprising things during that journey or that first director experience that you had that really opened your eyes?
That's a good question. Things that opened my eyes. No, I'm really into tight frames because I'm so focused on performance with character. And then when I have to pull back and look at the full story, I realize how important it is to create context as a director. So the audience needs to know where you are. They need to know what you're doing. They need to know the environment. And so I've really learned that as much as I like that close-up and that intimate portrayal, whether it's comedy, drama, horror, sci-fi, you really need to let the audience know what's going on. And so it's important to kind of grab the wider story arc and scope by getting as much as you can while you're on set, and then letting the editor have their free will with it at the end to make a full story, right? To feel like you're immersed in the experience.
I love that. Keeping that bird's eye view open and fresh and like taking into account what the audience needs. It's powerful. Sorry, Lauren, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I feel like you don't realize how important shot selection is until you're in post-production of a process, but like making sure you have the mediums, the wides, and the close-ups, because you don't know like whose perspective you're going to need to be in until you're in the editing room.
Precisely. And when I direct, I really try to direct for the edit. So when I create my shot list, I think about frame by frame exactly what I want to see in the final cut. So it is always better to get more as a director, but I have learned that, you know, if you've got it and you don't have final cut, beware that people might use it, right? So really, really be discretionary too, I think, about what you're doing and shoot for the edit. Because a perfect example is there was a recent project I was on and I knew exactly what I wanted. I got the reactions I wanted. I didn't have final cut. I was a director for hire. And they were like, well, where are these reaction shots? You know, and I was like, we didn't need them, you know, like this wasn't the POV I was going from, you know, like the strongest POV I found was this POV. And that's why I shot it this way. And so it's so important to have that kind of communication with your writer, with your producer, with your showrunner, about what their vision is too, down to the nitty gritty, right? Because I can follow the slug lines as much as possible with a writer's script. But at the end of the day, if you've got a shot in mind and you're hiring me to come on board and make that happen for you, you got to let me know what that is, right? Because you can't always just think that we're going to be on the same page, even if we really do see eye to eye.
But then with the shot list, I'm curious, how married are you to it once you're on set and like something spontaneous comes up? And what if you're on a, you know, a time crunch, as I'm sure you always are when you're on set?
Yeah.
So how do you like give yourself a little freedom, or do you allow yourself a little bit of freedom to kind of just like maybe wing it one or two scenes, or I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I always make sure we build in time for improvisation because that's where I started in my background. I tend to hire actors for their strengths. So I know if they're good at that, I know if they like it. I, as an actor, love it. And I think that you need to leave room for spontaneity. So I used to make fun growing up of my mom when she would create a plan and it was so by the book and it would be like scheduled fun. Like, what the heck is scheduled fun, right? And so for me, I try to be as prepared as possible. I do everything in prep, right? So that we get on set, we get what we need, and then there's room to grab one or two, right? And inevitably, the happy accidents occur anyway. And so you have to just go with it. You have to be willing to like let it go. Let go and let God, as they say in various programs and in life. And I think it's important, right? Because that beauty, that spontaneity, that present moment that we all search for in why we do what we do is going to happen on set. And so you just have to be willing to throw it all out, to know it, have it in your being, and then just really be present and work with the actors and the crew and be inspired, right? Be inspired in the moment. That's to me the beauty of all of it.
And I'm sure that your producers appreciate you for that, because I mean, my worst nightmare as a producer is when my director comes to me and they're like, hey, we're going to add on two more shots here. I'm like, no, you're not. We're making the day today and I will not be having these random shots you've decided that you like.
Well, you know, it's funny because that's hard, right? Like, and then that's the balance of like, okay, well, where's my give and take, right? Like, where's my shots that I really got to get? Where's the one I'm inspired by? Me and my DP are going, oh, wow, like this lighting, like let's grab this angle. Like this is really going to enhance it. And that's where it's like, let me have that conversation with the producer. Let me say, okay, let me give you this one. If you give me this one, you know, I'll find a way to make it work. Because yes, it's my job to make the day as well. And we all want to get the best performances, but we also want to get the best film.
Yeah, I also remember, Angela, when I first met you, you shared with me some really powerful quotes from some of the legends that you've had the opportunity to work with when you were an actor. Because when I first met you, I remember, I think I was contemplating whether or not to go get my MFA in producing. Mm-hmm. And you told me about how your experience working with some legends really gave you some insight on how you need to have a full life outside of just acting and make sure that you're seeing yourself as a full artist. Would you mind talking a little bit about those experiences that you shared with me?
Sure, of course. Those are ones I talk about a lot because they really stuck with me. One of them was I got to play Al Pacino's daughter in an indie film called The Humbling that was directed by Barry Levinson. And he was one of my heroes growing up. I mean, everything from Scarface to The Godfather, right? And oddly enough, my great uncle had worked with him in The Godfather. He played one of the heads of the eight families, right? Or five families.
The alignment. Yeah. Yes.
Shot up in the turnstile toward the end. And so I was just like, if I don't ask this guy everything I've ever wanted to know while I'm on set right now, I'm going to kick myself. So we started chatting it up and I was letting him know about my great uncle and yada, yada. And I said to him, so, you know, if you were me right now, like, what advice would you give me? And the first thing he said was, get out of the house. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, as an actor, you're always in the house, right? You're waiting for somebody to call. You're not really engaging in the outside world. You're not meeting your community. You're not interacting with the world, creating your own stories, right? Get out of the house. Go sit in a cafe and talk to people. Go meet people. Go to plays. Go fill your soul. I said, okay, that's good advice, especially after COVID. And this was way prior to COVID when he said this to me. I'm sure we can all relate where we got stuck in this like rut, you know, of being home. And it's got its pluses. We're remote right now, but its minuses are, you know, that disconnect of the energy of people, the interpersonal that we love so much and being on set. And the other thing was, he said, you know, have that other thing that really fulfills you artistically, because this business is so much about luck. And assuming you have the talent and assuming you have the drive, you might get lucky and the timing aligns, but you really don't have a full say over how this goes. So, you know, have that other thing that inspires you. And I said, well, I love to write. I've been writing a lot. He said, great. Keep doing that, right? Like, have that other thing that you can go to. And I say, I just spoke on a panel at Breckenridge Film Festival, and I referred back to that because I really feel like as artists, sometimes we can forget to refill our creative well. And so we can go, 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 and kind of then bang our heads against the wall sometimes as to why something's not working or why it's not happening for us or why this one road we're pursuing so hard isn't really panning out. And I think that's when we have to take a step back, relax, take a vacation, go to a museum, go out in nature, go to the beach, do something, anything, sit in a park, meditate, you know, but have your own life, find those stories that fulfill you, and find the other artists that inspire you, because that's what's really going to take you to the next place and keep you sane and happy in this crazy business.
It is crazy. It's nonstop, but I love the fullness of life outside of the characters that we bring to life or the stories that we bring to life. That's so, so critical. I find, yeah, sometimes it does get easy to just get holed up and like focusing on preparing for this project or that project. But then the balance of just being present in your surroundings, that's critical. At what point did you find that was like really easy for you to implement in your life? Or did it take a little bit to really get into like a consistent pattern of being able to like, you know, remove yourself from storyteller world and jump into real life?
I think that is an ongoing journey for all of us, right? Especially when we're, you know, mm-hmm. just starting out, or even in your first 10 years of your creative endeavors, you can really start to over-identify with the role that you're playing in life, right? And I think everyone can do that in some way, shape, or form with their job or their hobbies or their role as, whether it's a wife, a mother, a writer, an actor, fill in the blank, right? Whatever hat you're wearing in that moment. And I think it's really important to just understand that we are more than what we do every day.
Yeah.
Angela, I've also been really excited to tell you that Al Pacino came to Colombia. And I remembered you telling me this story, so I made a point of it to ask him his advice for up-and-coming actors. And his new advice that he's also added, I guess, to his repertoire of advice is to listen, because he felt like that young actors now coming up weren't listening enough and felt like they knew more going into it. And he was talking about like the importance of taking in your surroundings and not being afraid to learn and maintaining curiosity within your acting.
I think that's really powerful, and I love that you shared that. Thank you. There's a great book about curiosity that Ron Howard's producing partner, Brian, wrote, and it's very similar in that respect, right? Of just always being open, always listening. It's that, right? Like, if you're not curious, if you're not open-minded, you're not going to be fully available to the stories that come to you. And I'm very woo-woo, so get ready for it. It's kind of like, you know, big magic. You know, those stories, they point you through the muse, right? And you might get the idea, but if you don't act on the idea, the story goes to the next vessel, to the next person, right? And to whomever is going to be reciprocating of it. And so there's also a lot of people who have big ideas and don't execute. And so be ready for the idea to pass you by and for someone else to take it. And I think that's why as artists, we can go, oh my God, I had that idea. And you see somebody do it. It's like, well, did you do it? Yeah. Did you act on it? And were you open, right? Like maybe you were shut down or closed-minded, or there was something going on in your life that prevented you from doing that at the time. And that's fine. Maybe it wasn't for you. But if you really weren't ready to receive, then that person who is going to take it.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. I'm so curious now. Who was this? Who was one of the more influential figures in your life that really opened your eyes to this sort of alchemy and ownership of the power that we have?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think my grandmother, she was so powerful. She was such an important influence on me in my life when I was younger. She was like my second mother. My mother was disabled, and for a few years, she couldn't turn her head, and she was in bed. And she became such a pillar of strength for me. She really showed me how much perseverance could take us really far in life. And in that interim, I had my grandmother who really believed in me and told me I could do anything. And she had a sixth sense about her. She really was a magical woman. And she had this ease about her, this grace in the world. She was funny as f***. Am I allowed to curse? Because it's true. but it's one of those things where just, you know, she would say, oh, they're talking to me again, you know, and I was young. She passed away when I was 13. And I don't know if I ever really fully knew what she meant by that. And my mother told me later, you know, spirits would talk to her. And I've had these really beautiful experiences where she's come to me and I've kind of felt her all around me. And I've had some really inexplicable things happen in the world of sixth sense, in the world of premonition, and even in the world of, I woke up 3 days ago with a song in my head and wrote it down, and I'm about to record it this week because I dreamt it. You know, it's these things that if you really stay open and you stay grounded and present, but tapped into the world and the energy around us, that's where the magic happens. And it's a wonderful thing when we can do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a powerful resource to tap into, especially with so much going on. And with you being an expert of multitasking and being a multi-hyphenate, what does it mean to you to be a multi-hyphenate?
You know, I think being multi-hyphenate means I am so much better at all of my jobs because I understand the jobs of everyone else. Right. So it doesn't mean I have to do it all at the same time. It doesn't mean it has to all be me. Thank God. I don't want it to be all me. You know, I love to collaborate. It's one of my favorite things to do, that synergy of hiring a team of experts to come together on set and make something you could never make by yourself is why I do what I do. And one of the reasons I love to do what I do. And so when I can look at somebody and go, I've done that job. It's really hard. I know what it entails. I can not only respect them so much more when I walk on set, but I can, it's almost like being an actor and being in someone else's shoes and finding empathy for that person's role in the world and their role on set and in your professional life. I think it's really important to just understand and value everybody that's around you. And when you're very familiar with all of those jobs, you can do that a little more easily.
Can you tell our listeners about when on your journey you decided to start your production company and why and what the process looked like?
Yeah, absolutely. So Charlie Bear Productions was created in 2012 in November. I wanted to create my first series television pitch. It was a sizzle for a TV show that I had written. And I was trying to make work that I wanted to, that would facilitate my acting career, but also that it was just fun and funny. I was on soaps at the time. I was being hired to do really fun jobs, but just nothing comedic. So I was writing my way in, right? And so I'm very business minded. My stepfather, who raised me, who's adopted me, is my inspiration for that. He's a small business owner. And so I said, I'm going to start my production company. I'm going to research how to create an LLC in New York. I need to have ownership over this. I want to make sure the copyright is there. I want to make sure I do it right. And so I started Charlie Bear Productions. It's the namesake of my dog, Charlie Bear. He's a one-take wonder. He's been in all of my films. He's amazing. He's now retired. Don't ask. He's not available. But he inspired the name, and we've been around since then. And what inspired me to keep it going was I was listening to The Seven Habits of Stephen Covey. Thank you.
Right.
Stephen Covey. And I remember being on the elliptical one day listening to the CD audio version. And it said, you know, what's your mission statement? And I was like, what is that? You know, what's my mission statement? What's my mission statement in life? What's my business mission statement? You know, they talk about branding a lot, but I think even more importantly is what's your why? And that's your mission statement, mm-hmm. right? And so for me, I wanted to tell stories that made people feel less alone in the world. I wanted to tell stories that made a difference and changed perspectives. I wanted to tell stories where women were at the forefront of the conversation and also behind the camera, and we were seeing things through their lens. And so that's what really created Charlie Bear, and what has kept it going is this focus on unique, diverse stories with a social impact through a female lens.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I love that you spoke about a mission statement. I feel like that's so like a great feature of even having a vision board. Mm-hmm. You know, and it being as specific as possible, it all comes down to why we're doing what we're doing. Because if we just get caught up in the rat race or the gerbil wheel, the hamster wheel of just moving forward without any sort of purpose, it kind of fades very quickly as far as like momentum that can be built.
It's true. Yeah. Right? And when you have this thing to always come back to, it just helps you hone your focus. It makes it really easy to like sift through the clutter. And finding my why was not simple. I make it sound simple because I spent a lot of time doing it and refining it and figuring it out. But once it was there, it was just like, oh, great. You know, now all the millions of scripts that get sent to me, I can easily make a 10 question list of, you know, does it fulfill these 5 things that my production company mandates? Is it a Charlie Bear production? Is it a project that I want to work on as an actor that's not a Charlie Bear production, right? Like there are other iterations of work that I take. I was a director for hire on this recent series, this dramedy that was sponsored by the Bay Area Lyme Association. And it fit my mandate for Charlie Bear. It really was a social impact story led by a female voice. It didn't end up being a Charlie Bear production. I was director for hire and I was a producer on it, but I didn't take on the production into my company. But it still made it easy for me to say yes to that project. I liked the writing. I liked the social impact. I liked the why of all of it. And so I think that when you can sift through that pretty quickly, it can make it easy to just say yes. And that's exciting, right?
I feel like you bringing up how you discovered your mission statement just makes your film Without Grace make so much sense, because I saw that before I knew you at Filmmakers, and obviously I thought it was a beautiful film, and especially with you both acting and producing in it. How do you balance making sure something aligns with your mission statement when you're wearing so many different hats in making the project come alive?
Great question. I made sure to hire a line producer on that set. It was one of the best decisions I've ever made, to the extent that it actually inspired me to ask her to be my mentor. And I wanted to go be a line producer for other people because I was so grateful for the gift that she gave me on set, which is allowing me to do my best work as an actor, take off my producer hat for the most part. There were things I still had to come in for, right? Like some things are unavoidable. But to really be able to delegate, let go, and do my best work, I needed to hire out. I hired a director. At the time, I could have directed it myself. Would I have gotten as good of a performance out of myself? Probably not, right? I didn't know enough about directing at the time. I'm so grateful for Deborah Kammeyer, who I hired to come on board. I learned a lot from her as a director and becoming one, even though I had directed before. And I also gave myself the best opportunity to succeed as an actor, a writer, and a producer. And Veronica Nickel, who very graciously came on board to be the line producer, is just the hardest worker I know. You know, she inspires me so much. She produced a little film called Moonlight that you may have seen. She's incredible, right? You know, yeah. I got lucky, but I knew what I was getting with her because she walked the walk, right? There's a lot of people who don't walk the walk in this business. And I could very quickly learn that next to the director, the line producer is the hardest working person on set. It's really, you are doing all of the hard work. You're carrying the load. And so I think that was a really interesting opportunity to learn what that job did, to give someone else a job, and then to go and give that gift to other actors afterwards. Also, because I'm pretty financially savvy, right? I've just always been good with numbers. I really like them. And it's made me a better filmmaker to understand budgets and understand the realities of when I'm writing a script, how much it's going to cost to make it, right? I'm not in a business of writing scripts that never get made. It's not good business. And frankly, it feels like a waste of my time. So, yeah. You know, so maybe some writers don't care and they just want to write to write. And that's a beautiful thing because it's an art and a craft in and of itself. But I love to make movies. So I want to make sure they get made. So when I can have that fiscal mind about me, I have a better sense of like, oh, maybe I should cut that scene later, or maybe I should write it for this environment that I already have access to.
I love that you said that, and I agree completely, because the film that I made this summer, I was directing and acting, but had a really incredible producer who took off like the nitty gritty from my plate that would have distracted me. And the other thing that I did that I found pivotal in making it work was I hired a casting director who brought on like amazing actors around me, including Jodie Benson, who was the original Little Mermaid, and she played the role of my mom. I hadn't written my character to cry during a scene with them, but because she was so good at listening to Al Pacino, I just listened to her. I cried naturally just from that interaction. And it made me realize that if you are going to take on a project where you're wearing multiple hats, then you better make sure you have the best team around you, because you cannot do as great of a job if everybody else isn't working and have the same drive for the project that you do.
Yeah. And congratulations, Lauren. I didn't know that. I can't wait to see your film.
Thank you. I was just telling Alejandro that it's finally coming together. We're now just working on color corrections.
Very exciting. So, send it my way. I can't wait to see it.
I will. Thank you.
What was the experience like directing Unimaginable?
That was really cool. That film came about because I was working with this mental health nonprofit. We were supposed to film a suicide prevention narrative in March of 2020, and we all saw what happened there. And so the head of the nonprofit, not one to sit on her hands, said, I want to know what teens are dealing with now. I want to have my summer intern gather a bunch of teenagers to talk to them about what kind of resources we could provide them in our next film, or even just create a promo for Glow Media and what we're doing right now during this crisis that's unfolding. And I said, great, I'm all about it. She's like, well, you just, you know, jump in and conduct some interviews and listen and record and then let me know what you think. I said, yeah, sure. And we were gonna apply for a grant with LAUSD. We had just met with them to make a new film. It potentially was going to be an anti-vaping comedy because that was something that teenagers were really needing help with. And it's still is. And that grant kind of went to the wayside as soon as COVID sort of took the front stage. But what I found was I was so inspired by all of the stories these teens were sharing. They were so open and vulnerable. And I immediately came to Trish outside of it and said, this is a documentary. Like we have this story. And it was just the furthest thing from my purview. I mean, I watch docs, but I'm not a huge purveyor of docs. And I'm an actor, right? Like I love character and there's pretty strong characters in docs. But for me, I'm looking for performance first and I'm coming at it from performance first. And so it was the funniest thing when I was all of a sudden pitching her the stock idea and making up a budget, and I made a whole deck. I brought it to her and said, you know, can you get me this money? Like, I think we need to do this, and we can film it remotely. It'll be safe. It'll give these kids purpose. It'll give me purpose when I feel so helpless during this pandemic. If asthma, I can't be on set. You know, I can't be in a food kitchen where I'd normally like to go and be, you know, helping out. And so she said, she brought it to her board. They said yes. And I got to spend a year with these kids every week talking to them, sending them questions. I sent them filming equipment. They filmed themselves. I would interview them, much like you're doing now, remotely. And then after a year, I went, once it was safe enough, we had a small skeleton crew go to each of their homes. We narrowed it down from 30 to 5 students between the ages of 17 and 19. And I got to meet them in person. And I felt like, oh my God, like I almost, there was not that big of an age difference, but I felt that, like they were my kids. You know, it was just, we become so close and personal. They really opened up about their mental health during the pandemic and about their personal stories. They invited me into their homes. You know, I met their families. It was really beautiful. And it taught me that documentary is really where filmmaking meets activism. And because my production company is so focused on social impact, I realized how powerful that method of storytelling could be. And so now I feel like it's opened a whole new world for me. I still creatively, as an artist, I'm a little more driven by narrative. There's just something about it that's untouched. And that's probably the actor in me, the director in me that likes to direct acting in actors, that likes to create production design, you know, and like really build worlds. But there's something really special about the storytelling element and the potential for change that documentary filmmaking can make. And I definitely uncovered that within Imagine Mill.
I love this. Oh my goodness. And taking it back to that mission statement, that personal mission statement that we have to hold within, I feel that's so beautiful how it just continues to evolve. Do you have more documentary ideas that are percolating in your brain or...
No. Yeah, I do. There's a couple that we've been tossing around this year. We've been very lucky to have the ear of the De Novo Initiative. It is a wonderful group of badass women who sued the federal government and won, and then created a foundation with the money that they won from it to create this initiative called the De Novo Initiative. And their mission statement or their tagline is storytelling inspires change. So it was really right in alignment with what I was doing at Charlie Bear and what I was doing with the Glow Media Project with teen mental health literacy. So they came on board and provided us a grant for consulting for the year to help grow the Glow Media Project, to make There Can Be Light, which is my newest film. It's the narrative on suicide prevention. And then also to basically give us an ear toward pursuing other projects. So we've been pursuing one on climate change anxiety in teens. We've been looking at one about reducing the statute of limitations for sexual assault survivors. And there's a few others as well that I can't really talk about yet. But yeah, we're definitely pursuing doc stories. It's all about story at this point, right? Like, what's the story that hits you over the head, that takes you over, that gets you out of bed every day? And for me, the one I think that can make the most impact.
And is There Can Be Light what you've been on the festival circuit for?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and, you know, how you've been managing your time, especially with the strikes maybe ending, you know? I want to hear all about
it. Yeah. It's There Can Be Light started its festival run in August at the Oscar qualifying Holly Shorts Film Festival. So that was very exciting.
I was there too. We were both there.
I was there too.
I couldn't believe it. I didn't know I would have had you there at our premiere. It was sold out. We were in the Alliance of Women Directors block. It was so inspiring to see so many women up on stage together showing their films, and 3 or 4 directors next to me in that block who I knew very well. And now we're doing the festival circuit together, which is exciting. It's such a beautiful film. It was such a blessing to make that film. We are doing grassroots screenings at high schools and getting wonderful, wonderful responses. We just went to Soho Film Festival in New York. We were then at DC International Shorts in Washington, DC. And then I just got back from Breckenridge, Colorado at the Breckenridge Film Festival, which is just
Okay, country coverage.
I mean, for a week before that, I came home with a cold. I took all the vitamins and I still left 2.5 weeks of traveling around the world with, you know, 5 states and 2 countries. It hit me, but it was totally worth it. It was a really, really great experience to meet so many filmmakers and hear so many stories about the impact. People really share their personal stories when they get touched by yours, which is so special. And we're about to announce, I guess I could say it now, you'll be the first to know. We haven't made the announcement yet, but we are at the Canberra This Is My Brave Mental Health Film Festival in Australia. So we're international.
Oh my God.
Which is exciting. And then we will be at Fort Lauderdale Film Festival in Florida in the first week of November. So that's next.
Congratulations. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So are you going to Australia?
I'm not going to go to Australia. That's the one I have to duck out of because I just got the green light on my new film and I've got to jump to work. So we're doing contracts this week and then we're back in the studio. I'm doing a virtual reality project with musicians from the Foo Fighters.
Wow, cool. Well,
so that'll be announced next week.
You are constantly moving and shaking.
It's sort of like COVID took us into this like hole of creativity and grief and trauma and like all this stuff brewed and then came out of me. And now I've got all these scripts and I'm just like throwing them at the wall and seeing what sticks. But, you know, with the strikes, I couldn't put it out there. So luckily the nonprofit that I work with is not associated with any strike companies. We don't sell to the AMPTP. We provide all of our short films free of charge for kids to learn from. And anything that I've worked on separately, it's, you know, I'm just writing. And as soon as this signing on the dotted line happens, I'll be hitting the pavement, you know, bringing on producers and building financing for my first feature.
Hell yes. It sounds like, you know, keeping busy in the midst of the strikes is really no challenge for you. But for those listeners who might be struggling with either motivation to stay productive or to try and find different ways to be active in the entertainment industry, do you have any advice for what they might be able to tap into or do?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that because I didn't have it the whole time. Something that gave me a lot of feels for my soul was being in an acting class in LA. I got on stage at Marjorie Ballantyne Studio. It's all incredible plays. I cannot tell you I did Marriage Play by Edward Albee. I discovered this new playwright, or maybe not so new, but new to me, Melissa Ross. She's done some beautiful work in New York. Just wonderful actors that I got to collaborate with. My mentor, the producing director of Love, Victor, Jason Ensler, was also in the class. So I got to build a stronger relationship with him. And he saw my work as an actor, and we got to talk about how we would direct the scenes the next day. So sort of twofold, right? It was such a learning experience, but also just it got me on stage again. It got me pursuing my artistry, which is what this is just what we need as artists, right? Like, especially during harder times when it's a struggle, either financially or in your mental health, that's really where it's at, is just like finding your art, getting up every day and writing. You know, I get up and I write in the morning and then I would get on the picket lines and having that solidarity with my other actors, writers, and the producers and the casting directors came out and my AWD sisters came out, and that kind of solidarity and community really kept me going. So I would definitely suggest get on the picket line and just pursue your craft, you know, even if you're just getting up and dancing every day or getting up and singing every day, whatever it is that like gets you moving and keeps your head from getting too crowded by all the stuff, you know?
Absolutely. I'm curious for you because like, you know, you're balancing being a director for hire, an actor for hire, a festival run, a production company, taking on other projects. How do you prioritize and how do you balance what you're doing, like in a month, in a day?
Yeah, good question. I prioritize by what's driving me the most, right? What's getting me the most excited at the time? Because sometimes there can be a lot going on or nothing going on, right? I can have 12 projects and nothing's really going, or I can have 3 projects and they all have potential for right now. So it's kind of like, well, timing's important, topic is important, zeitgeist is important. you know, the market right now isn't hot for buying, right? So it's kind of like, maybe don't pitch everything you've got right now. Listen to the market. That's important. So I think, you know, you've got to be reading the trades. You got to stay tapped into what's going on in the economy. The economy is not doing great. Inflation's high. You know, prices are going to be high. We're going to come out of a strike and all of these crews are going to want to work at the same time. And it's going to be just like COVID, where everyone's going to be at a cost premium. My prediction is everything will cost 30% more again, because you're going to have to pay more and we're in inflation, right? So people are trying to make up the money that they lost while they were on strike, whether, and it trickles down to the catering companies, to the locations, right? So I think people just have to be really smart and mindful of the industry and the economy that we're in, not just in the artistry and the craft that they're trying to bring to the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of mindfulness, what sort of routines or healthy habits do you swear by to keep yourself grounded and focused? And
yeah, definitely. You know, this is something I've been refining for a very long time, but it's really important. It works for me. I get up, I meditate, I do transcendental meditation every morning for 15 or 20 minutes. I answer my East Coast emails for my East Coast clients. Then I pop out of bed, I take care of my dogs. And we dance. I dance with my dogs every morning. Today it was Macklemore and we dance. It was great. I did a Tony Robbins seminar, and they said one of the best things you can do for your body is move your hips in the morning. And for me, as a former professional dancer, it just kind of gets the chi going and it gets me happy and loose and not taking myself too seriously. So I dance while I'm making the coffee and the dogs are happy. And I have my either green juice or I have a water with lemon every morning before I have anything else, just to like kind of cleanse the body out. And then I sit down at my desk and I write, and I get that private time just to like have that clearing, whether it's narrative writing, whether it's creative journaling, my morning pages. On Mondays, it's often my massive to-do list. And it clears my head and makes me feel a little healthier throughout the day. And then I make sure I do some sort of movement. So I have a walking pad now so that I can walk while I'm thinking at my desk. It's been a game changer for me. So if I'm not on the picket lines, I'm on the walking pad, or I'm taking a walk around the neighborhood just to clear my head and get my thoughts going. Cause I do some of my best writing when I'm either walking, doing yoga, or swimming. So, and if nothing else, wait, all else fails, I get in the shower. That's where the ideas go.
I am so curious. This flow of energy does happen to me as well, where it's like I like late night walks as well, but something about like the movement, it's like very solitary and meditative. But what is this walking block you're talking about? Is this like a treadmill?
Okay, wait, Alejandro. Angela, what I was going to tell you is that we have the same routine, essentially. I mean, I guess... I'm also meditation, morning pages, take care of the dogs. I need to add in this dancing bit, but my newest addition was a walking pad. And my boyfriend also was like, it's a treadmill. I'm like, it is a walking pad. It doesn't have an incline. It's just a walking pad. But I love it because you can like read scripts on it, get all your emails done, and you feel like, you know, you're so productive. I feel like I'm doing three things at once.
And you are.
Amazing.
Reading scripts is my biggest thing. A year and a half ago, I got an elliptical when it was like pandemic, deep in the pandemic. We had just gotten our new place here in Culver City, and I finally had the space for like a meditation self-tape / yoga room. And so we got the elliptical in there, and I said to myself, I am reading scripts while I'm on this thing. Like, this is why I'm buying this thing, so that I can move and I can still be productive. And when I had to throw the walking pad in there. So this is my big reveal. It's against the wall right now. But it's so good. And my head, you know, when you're sitting all day, it's terrible for your body, right? So it was really, really just to like make sure all the juices were still flowing and I'm not killing my back. These chairs, I've got like three different chairs in here. One's ergonomic. You know, you got to find the stuff that works.
I feel like a kid again with it. Like, I'm so excited about my new toy, you know?
I have another fun toy that I play with about twice a week. It's a rebounder. It's so much fun in the morning. That was the other suggestion besides moving the hips, was to rebound for 5 minutes in the morning just to get yourself going. So that's fun too. It's like a trampoline. It's a mini trampoline that you have in your house.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good times.
One other question. How long is the dance routine with the dogs?
It's only like 2 minutes. And sometimes they only want to go to the chorus. And I'm like, no, if you want your treat, you're going to have to stay through the whole song. But inevitably, once I do it, I'm still moving. And then the music stays on. And then I'm just kind of dancing around while I'm having my coffee and getting my breakfast ready. And it's a great way to start the day.
So cute. Oh,
I love it. Oh my
Tell
God.
Me your tips for the morning, Alejandro. Do you have anything I need to adapt into my routine?
Oh, I wish I could tell you. Oh my goodness. No, I am the worst morning person. So, you know, for me, it's really just like finding my center, often having like a hot tea or something soothing. And then my ability to focus sometimes can be a little scattered. So I do like an abbreviated meditation where, you know, I'll light my Palo Santo and then I'll do like a tuning fork session and then just like do expressions of gratitude just to kind of like kick the day off. And what I love about the tuning forks is that it just really kind of, I don't know, it adds a nice zing and like just heightens the frequency a little bit. And I find it practical. I found out about it randomly, like a few months ago. And as soon as I had that conversation with the person who told me about these tuning forks, went right up to my computer, logged into Amazon and got myself a little set that I live by it. It's so much fun. Oh my God. What's yours, Lauren?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Well, it's meditation, morning pages, green juice, walk, feed the dog. Lately, my boyfriend just had surgery. So it's also walk and feed the boyfriend, not walk. But get his ice machine together. But because some of my classes start pretty early with school, I've started meditating and journaling on the subway. And it's actually a nice challenge, you know, like, because there's so many distractions and like craziness happening around you that it does make you have to like stick within your bubble. But I feel like I need meditation and journaling before I can interact with anyone. Like, I just know I'll be a better person if I have it. Yeah. So I need it regardless if it's on the subway or wherever.
When I miss it, I'm kind of like, oh gosh, what's happening today? And that didn't happen actually ever on the trip, which I was really proud of myself for. Because, you know, you can lose some of your morning activities when you're traveling. I always had my morning meditation. I missed my afternoon ones sometimes because we would be, you know, 12 hours out at TIFF all day long. But I will say that it kept me sane. And it's that rejuvenating element when maybe you can't get that nap in. You can meditate anywhere as long as you're holding onto your purse, girl.
Yeah.
You're good to go. So I was definitely meditating in the middle of, like, the Hyatt lobby at, like, 7:30 p.m. one night before a party with South by at TIFF. You know, you got to do what you got to do. But
you got to do it. So as we are damsels in the DMs, we got to ask, what is the funniest, wildest, most intriguing or inspirational DM that you have ever received?
I sent this to one of my mentors the other day just to mess with him. And he was like, geez, women have to deal with so much. I'm like, I'm like, real. This is normal. Here we go. Hello, sweetheart.
Okay.
Heart emoji. Sorry for the manner of approach for intruding in on your privacy. Will you be interested in a weekly allowance of $800 in exchange for your online companionship? Double heart, double heart. No sexual intimacy. What? Now that's weird. Why don't you want to have sex? If you're going to go for it, you may as well go for it.
Right. But what is online companion?
I would love to know. I mean, nowadays you can sell photos of your feet for lots of money. So online companionship, I don't know. And, you know, the old me would have been like, let's see what this guy, you know, because I love to chase a story, but I just don't have time anymore. I don't, for the crazies of the world.
I mean, the present me is thinking, sign me up. I mean, I need funding for my project. So this sounds like a very lucrative
endeavor. You're like, here's my Venmo. Let's see.
Check my bio. The link is all there. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was a good one. Acting. Oh, and then, you know, it was the strike. So I think what I had said was, I'm considering side gigs, but I'm worried this one might violate the digital contracts, acting via online companionship, so my new business model.
Oh
my. You responded?
No, that's what I sent to my mentor.
You are a good person. I never respond to these kinds
of things. I didn't respond. I'm not that crazy. I mean, sometimes it's entertaining, but no. I don't have time. I can't entertain myself that way anymore. The way I entertain is to send it to my writing group and get a good kick out of it, right? So.
The DM of the week asks, would you act in a project that you've also directed / have you?
It is called Drive Through Confessionals. Woo-ha-ha, Elizabeth Banks's wet work. That's a different topic. her network decided to call it Chicken Confessions. They released it during the pandemic. And it was because we couldn't get on set, right? It was like the second week of COVID. And of course, I had this story that was like not letting go of me, right? I couldn't not do it. So I called my friend Sarah, who has a Red camera. And she loves to just like point and shoot. She's like a run and gun. She's an Oscar nominated documentarian. So like girls, she knows how to get it. And so I said, I have this really funny story about Chick-fil-A that I want to write about how they're making people do Hail Marys in the drive-thru as far as a confession in order to get their chicken nuggets. Because there was the whole thing about how they weren't serving people on Sundays. And then there was a whole issue with the LGBTQ community that I was not happy about. But it was this idea of also in COVID, people were doing drive-up confessionals at church because people couldn't go to church. So they were literally driving up outside of churches and giving their confession. And I just thought the whole concept was hilarious. So I directed it from afar. I had her shooting. I acted in it. I held my little Zoom recorder under my chest inside the car, roll the window down, and talk to the drive-thru woman. I recorded my friend Chandra doing the voiceover later, playing the drive-thru person. That was remote. And then we couldn't get some of the shots I would like to have gotten as a director because it would have been unsafe. So Sarah couldn't get in the car with me and shoot over my shoulder, but she was able to stay in the parking lot, kind of run and gun. And we just, we bought a lot of chicken nuggets that day.
Love it. That is so disappointing about Chick-fil-A too, because it is so good, but like part of my conscience is so unsettled.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, but it was ripe for comedy, so I had to do it. And it was good practice, right? I directed the very first thing I did, the one I told you was a sizzle reel back in 2012 called The Change. I directed and acted in that. And I did see my performance suffer a little bit because it was my first try, right? So I learned after that. And so I think we nailed it on Chicken Confessions. You can see it on my Instagram at Angela Cohen. And my goal is to direct and act in my first feature, which is going to shoot in Ireland. It's in elevated horror. And it is called No Good Calls Come in the Middle of the Night.
Oh, name it and claim it. Yes, I'm excited to see that.
And oh. Horror is what's in, so I know that's going to do well.
People are loving horror, right? It's having a resurgence, a comeback.
Well, Angela, thank you so, so much for being here. It was so lovely getting to hear your story, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. So good to get to know you, Alejandro and Lauren. Can't wait to see your film. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. You are such a gem. Oh my goodness. And an amazing and admirable storyteller. I can't believe you had the time to squeeze in for this interview, but I'm so happy you did.
Thank you. Great to chat with you.
Anywhere where other people should stay up to date with your work other than the Instagram, which you just said?
Yes, absolutely. I have two websites. AngelaCohen.com has everything about acting and writing, and CharlieBearProductions.com, CharlieBearProductions.com. Has everything to do with Charlie Bear Productions and my directing work and all my wonderful clients. And you can reach out to me through either of those websites to get on my newsletter and stay up to date with what's going on.
We will be staying up to date. That's it.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
It has been an adventure as always. And please, we are waiting eagerly for your DMs, your voicemails, your letters, any sort of indication to help us share with you insights from experts and leading voices in the industry, whether it be in entertainment or anyone that you want to see come on the podcast and learn from.
Yes, please let us know who you want to have on and what you want to hear from them. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review. That allows us to continue to bring you content on any and all podcast platforms.
That's it. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And until next time,
it's going down in the DMs. Bye. Bye.
'Em. Yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs. We don't need them. We just leave them.
Please. Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.